evening. I would if you would open with me to Judges chapter 9. Judges chapter 9, and if you receive one from me, look at your outline if you have one, and if you don't, they're sitting on the tray back there, where the bulletins are anyway. You ever notice that some folks are just determined to do the wrong thing? They have various names, but there's these types of shows that I like to watch. The world's dumbest criminals. And you see these people, and they find the most obscure ways of committing crimes. They never work. That's why they're the world's dumbest criminals. And yet they continue to try. And you get some individuals who, you know, they're like trying to steal an ATM machine. Those things are bolted down. And they're hard as, I mean, I've seen people on that show do some of the most ridiculous things, trying to commit a crime and failing miserably. And then we know people who have this desire, this determination to do the wrong thing, who are actually good at it. Those are the people we should worry about. But why are there so many people just determined to do wrong? Being a parent, this concerns me, because sometimes I see this desire in my children. They get this idea in their head, and they want to perpetrate something wrong, and they want to do it no matter what. And no matter how many times you tell them not to, they're still right back there doing it again. Sometimes there are people in the Bible that way. And as we look here in Judges chapter chapter 8, we're going to see a few people here, a people, and then a couple of people who embody this very element. We're going to see, first and foremost, that the people in this area of Shechem were determined to do wrong. The people were determined to do wrong. Here in Judges chapter 8 and verse 22, we're going to read, he says, "Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, both you and your sons and your grandson also. For you have delivered us from the hand of Midian.'" Now as we look forward in the future, we'll see that it was not God's intention that the people choose a king. Not only that they wouldn't be like the other nations, but they didn't need a king because God ruled over them. And as God ruled over them, He took care of them. He supplied for them. He made sure that decisions were made appropriately. And no king could ever make decisions as well as God did. And yet even back in Gideon's time, they had this idea that they needed a king. They needed to be like other nations. And so they try to have Gideon begin this rulership, though he's not even of the lineage that's supposed to be the king, being Judah. And so they say, "Because you've delivered us, we want you and your son and your grandson also, and down on the line, to be our king." Verse 23. "But Gideon said to them, 'I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you.'" Notice that. "I shall not rule over you, nor my son." So Gideon refuses to be king, but not only that, he refuses that lineage to pass to his son. He says, "I don't want you messing with this. I don't want you asking my children. I want you to leave this nonsense alone. The Lord should rule over you, and you should know that." If you skip down to verse 30, though, we're going to read a few background to Gideon. Gideon had 70 sons who were his own offspring, for he had many wives. And his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore a son whose name he called Abimelech. Now I want you to notice the difference they make. There are 70 sons he has by wives, and there is one, it seems, not included in the 70, that comes by a concubine who lives in Shechem. And that's where all this stuff transpires. And so you keep going, there in verse 32. "Now Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a good old age and was buried in the tomb of Joash, his father, in Ophrah of the Abizarites." So it was, verse 33, "As soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-Bereth their god." So they chose a god for themselves, even though Gideon had just told them, "I'm not going to rule over you, the Lord should rule over you." Once again, the leader, the prominent leader, dies. Once again, the prominent leader dies. And these individuals want to make him king, or they want to make someone else king. And they're not satisfied with Gideon now. They don't like that Gideon refused them. "So we'll pick a god and he'll be our king." And in verse 34 he says, "Thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of their enemies on every side. Nor did they show kindness to the house of Zerubbabel," Gideon, "in accordance with the good he had done for Israel." Not only did they forget the Lord, but they forgot this guy they thought so highly of just a few verses ago. This guy that they thought should be king over them because of all the great things he'd done for them. And now he's dead and they don't care one bit. They're going to give up God. They're going to give up this desire to help out Gideon's family. And so the people forget what Gideon had done. Here in Judges chapter 9, we start with a man named Abimelech. And he's this same man, this concubine son that was born there in Shechem. A son of Gideon, or Zerubbabel. Now there in verse 1 it says, "Then Abimelech, the son of Zerubbabel, went to Shechem to his mother's brothers and spoke with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, 'Please speak to the hearing, in the hearing of all the men of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Zerubbabel reign over you, or that one rule over you? Remember that I am your own flesh and bone.' And his mother's brothers spoke all these words concerning him in the hearing of all the men of Shechem, and their heart was inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, 'He is our brother.' So they gave him 70 shekels of silver from the temple of Baal-berith, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless men, and they followed him. Then he went to his father's house in Ophrah, and killed his brothers, the 70 sons of Zerubbabel, on one stone. But Jotham, the youngest son of Zerubbabel, was left because he hid himself." Now, the ironic thing is that in verse 21, Jotham runs away after saying what his business. He runs away and he flees because he knows that this proverb is not going to be pleasing to Abimelech. So he's saving his own hide here. But you have this man, Abimelech, who is just absolutely determined to do evil here. Now, at first he ignores his father's wishes. His father, Zerubbabel, the man who was originally offered the kingdom, right? Gideon. And Gideon says, "No, not me, nor my children are going to rule over you." And yet, Abimelech thinks, "Hey, you know what? My dad's dead. Let's go back to Shechem and see if we can't rouse some support. Let's see if we can't get this thing done." And so he manipulates his brother. Notice what he says there. Well, the reason that they go with this idea is that they are brothers. Now, I don't know why that played so much into it. You've got 70 brothers. I'm sure they played each other to some degree. They manipulated one another. But it seems that Abimelech is either silver-tongued, or he is, in some ways, seen as the lost son of Zerubbabel because he's a concubine's son. He's not a legitimate son, right? Just as you had that whole issue with Sarah and Hagar, and where Hagar's child was not as predominant because Sarah then had a child, and so they matched one for another, trying to outdo the other. And yet, Abimelech, whether it's because of that or because they're just brothers, and some of the brothers really think this is a good idea, or they really want to do something nice for their brother, they go along with it. But then notice he also tries to manipulate the people. Not only does he send Gideon's sons, right? He doesn't go himself. He wants them to express their influence on the people. Right? He wants them to say it. He wants them to say, "Man, Abimelech is a great guy. We think he should be king. And isn't it better," he says, "that one man rule over you instead of 70? Could you imagine the nonsense, the ridiculousness of 70 people ruling over one little area in Shechem? And that would be absurd. So why don't you make me king? And I'll rule over." And he even goes on to say, "We are from the same place." His mother, this concubine, bore him in Shechem. He says, "We're of the same heritage. We're brothers in that way, right? By land. We're neighbors. So I wanna be this person for you." And so he hires worthless and reckless men. They make him king over this area, or leader over this area. And he takes these worthless and reckless men, and what you generally do with worthless and reckless men, evil. The Jews seem to be proficient at that. You have that even in the first century? You have that with so many of the apostles as they're preaching? It doesn't take long either for a mob to form or for people to go and to hire individuals to rouse a mob or to try to stone somebody or try to assassinate people. And yet this man killed his brothers on the same stone. And no one thought anything about it. No one cared one bit. And it kind of goes back to the people determined to do wrong that they'd forgotten what Gideon had done. Just a minute ago, they wanted Gideon to rule them, to reign over them, and their sons, and his son, and his grandson. They thought Gideon was this great guy. And yet they're letting his children die. They're letting his 70 sons be killed, 69 technically, because Jotham escapes. That is not a people seeking righteousness. Abimelech is not an individual seeking righteousness. They're determined, all of these individuals here are just determined to do the wrong thing, even to the degree there in Judges chapter 9 and verse 22. He says, after Abimelech had reigned over Israel 3 years, God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the crime done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might be settled and their blood be laid on Abimelech their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem who aided him in the killing of his brothers. Now, we know inevitably what happens to the two groups, right? Abimelech has his small little legion of army, right? His small group of people who were supporters of him. And then you got the men of Shechem, who he's supposedly over, but they've got a mutiny going on. And the funny thing is, there's no honor amongst thieves. You throw your lot in with people of ill repute and you'll get exactly what you're doing to other people. They're going to decide, and it takes a little nudge by God, it seems. He sets some ill will between some guy, Gaal, is his name, and who seems to be somewhat of a leader of this small group of men from Shechem. And so he sets this ill will in him and they start talking. And it doesn't take long before they decide that we don't really need Abimelech anymore. That we can handle this on our own. Who's Abimelech? What has he done? And so the mutiny begins, and as soon as any word of mutiny comes to a leader who has issues, you know, with being challenged, he of course sets an ambush for them, and they're coming out and they're setting an ambush for Abimelech, and you got these two sides that were at one time working together for ill, right, for doing evil things, and they were both together determined to do the wrong things. Now they're set against each other. Which honestly is why good always wins. But it's not even the people deciding to do the right thing, and that's the saddest thing of all. The people were still determined to do evil. But God, notice that, God determined that they would do the right thing. They get no reward for it. And in fact, the men, almost all of them, end up dying from the issue, which is oftentimes what happens in situations like that. So Abimelech, the problem of Abimelech is restored, is taken care of. The weight of the 69 brothers that he killed are set on his shoulders, right? He's held responsible for it, as well as the men of Shechem are held responsible for their activity in that venture. But I want you to notice Jotham's parable. This one boy, or this one son who escapes because he hid himself, they're in verse 7. He says, now when they told Jotham, he went and stood on top of a mountain of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and cried out, and he said to them, listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them, and they said to the olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, should I cease giving my oil with which they honor God and men and go to sway over trees? Then the tree said to the fig tree, you come and reign over us. But the fig tree said to them, should I cease my sweetness and my good fruit and go to sway over trees? Then the tree said to the vine, you come and reign over us. But the vine said to them, should I cease my new wine, which cheers both God and men, and go to sway over trees? Then all the trees said to the bramble, you come and reign over us. And the bramble said to the trees, if in truth you anoint me as a king over you, then come and take shelter in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now, that's a very interesting parable. He says that people who are producing or trees, I should say, we'll leave it in parable form for now, trees who are producing something or doing something beneficial don't stop producing and don't stop doing those beneficial things to rule over other trees. But the bramble who does nothing, he is more than happy to be king over you, to reign over you. Which is a slap in the face to Abimelech. Which is no wonder why he runs away as soon as this is said. Now this isn't a commentary by any means on today's political system. But in verse 16 he says, "Now therefore, if you have acted in truth and sincerity in making Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have done to him as he deserves." Now skip down to verse 19, that's where he picks back up this thought. "If then you have acted in truth and sincerity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come from the men of Shechem and Beth Milo and devour Abimelech." He says, you folks made your bed. You deserve each other. It's a match made in some other place than heaven. It says, you guys deserve each other. You're going to fight and you're going to war because you came to this conclusion and you sought to do unrighteousness. You sought to do evil. You sought to do wrong. And you will pay the consequences for it because each of you began from that position. When we seek to do ill towards others, when we seek, instead of doing the right thing, to do the wrong thing, we accept the consequences of those actions. Not just the physical consequences either. We accept at every point the spiritual consequences, because they're coming. And we will face them someday. We must, he says, determine to do right. Now, hopefully, you don't have to be spurred on by God as these men of Shechem were. Hopefully you will allow yourself to be a tool for God, not be made a tool by God. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6, he says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." He says, we must determine to do right. Because when we hunger and thirst, when that desire and that drive is in us to do the right thing, it'll find itself satisfied. Matthew 6:33, he says, "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you." He says, when we have that priority in place, when we want to do the right thing and we want to exist in the kingdom of God above anything else, everything else works out. Everything else works out. And that's the blessing of righteousness. That the Lord knows those who are His and how to protect them and how to take care of them and sustain them. And then in Acts chapter 10 and verse 34, he says, "Then Peter opened his mouth and said, 'In truth, I perceive that God shows no partiality. But in every nation, whoever fears Him and works righteousness is accepted by Him.'" That all of us possess that ability to work righteousness and be accepted by God. He says that first and foremost, that it's not through partiality. He's talking there to a bunch of Gentiles. People who sought to become Jews, they were probably proselytes, but Cornelius' household. "I perceive that God is no respecter of persons or shows no partiality. That whether you're white or you're black or you're Asian or you're Hispanic or you're American, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman or you're 4 years old or you're 104 years old. God has a place for those who work righteousness and fear Him. Those who strive to be with Him above all else. Those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Those are the individuals that will be filled, that will be taken care of. Those are the individuals who are accepted by God. And that leaves only one choice for any individual. The same choice that Abimelech had. The same choice that the men of Shechem had. The same choice even that Gideon and Samson and Barak and any of the individuals we'll ever talk about. God gives us free will that we could decide whether we will serve Him or serve ourselves or potentially even others. We decide. And as we do, we accept the consequences or rewards for doing so. If you are not serving the Lord this day, you can change that. You can become a servant of the Almighty God of heaven and earth, and you can reap the rewards. Or you can sow dishonor and wrongdoing in your life and receive the consequences of your actions. If you, this night, have need of the Lord's invitation to change your lot in life, to become made new, changed and transformed, you can receive those promises this day. If you need help to return to Him, or you need the prayers or assistance of the congregation in any way, I pray whatever you need that you would come while we stand and while we sing.